Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
That's right. You are Locked On Broncos, and it is time to drop some knowledge. I am Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com, and with me is my co-host, Luke Polglaze, a semi-pro football coach, an NFL draft analyst, among many other things. Luke, a tough day in Broncos country. How are you, my friend?
You know, a tough day indeed, but another iteration of the podcast yet to come, so I am here.
We're going to break down this game, and, you know, speaking for myself, going to try and put up as positive a spin on this as we can. But first, understand that Locked On Broncos isn't here to just report the news. We're here to give you that more in-depth analytical look at your favorite team, the Denver Broncos. Be sure to tell your friends about the show. Share the episodes on social media, whether it's Twitter, Facebook. Help us blow this thing up because we are committed to bringing you a daily podcast focused entirely on your Denver Broncos at least 5 days a week. The truth is, Luke and I, we're maniacal about football. We're just as sick about the Broncos as you, our listener, is. Now, please be sure as well, follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Broncos. We really need each listener to take a quick second, find at Locked On Broncos, and click the follow button on Twitter. Very important to us growing the show. You may have heard us mention before, we had to recently start the account from scratch. So do us a solid and go follow the show on Twitter. Now, of course, the home of Locked On Broncos is Audio Boom, but be sure to subscribe on iTunes. And if you're an Android user, also on Stitcher. Two games left. Who in the heck knows what's going to happen, but you're not going to want to miss a single Locked On Broncos episode. All right, Luke, for the second straight week, you were right, I was wrong. The Broncos dropped their sixth game of the season, losing at home to the Patriots 16-3. And this is, you know, this is just a, it was a tough game to watch, Luke. I frankly wanted to, you know, pull my hair out at times watching this sad excuse for, I guess you could call it an offense, sputter throughout the game.
Yeah, and this is something that we've seen just kind of slowly trending towards this point over the course of the season that, you know, they've struggled at times throughout the season, and then this was just kind of the ultimate summation, really, of that. Just struggling to move the ball, inconsistencies, threes and outs, punts, poor turnovers. And this was really kind of the culmination of what this season is just, it seems like, slowly marching towards.
Yeah, I mean, and it got out to a terrible start for the Broncos, of course. Jordan Norwood muffed the first punt of the game, and it really, in what turned out to be a harbinger of things to come. Gary Kubiak really inexplicably chose to sit Khalif Raymond instead, going with Norwood as the team's punt returner. We're going to talk a little bit more about maybe why Kubiak made that decision a little bit later in the show, but the reality is, Luke, Kubiak ignored the fact that Norwood is a mentally compromised player. He just can't be trusted anymore. And then, of course, Norwood even fumbled later on in garbage time in what would be Denver's final offensive play of the game. And there's no doubt, you know, Jordan Norwood deserves whatever shade's getting thrown his way right now. But, Luke, it's also got to be on Kubiak for putting him in that position.
Yeah, well, some of that goes on Kubiak, absolutely. I mean, Norwood has to make the plays. There's no excusing that, but you can't put a player in that position if you've really seen consistently throughout the year poor performance. And, you know, I'm all for giving a guy another chance. You know, sometimes that extra shot can mean the difference for a player, cause him to step up and take his game to that next level. But, man, you know, when he's made consistent mistakes that have just really bitten the team in the back this year, you can't keep trotting Norwood out there. And, you know, part of that goes on Joe DeCamillis, the special teams coordinator. You know, he's got to say, you know, all right, here's who I want at returner this week. But, man, Kubiak's got to be better than that. he really has to really kind of read those signs and see what it means to the team. And especially when I thought Raymond has played two very, very, very solid games over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's brought a spark. And it's safe to say, I think, that he's been, you know, he's been strong with the ball. There's been no muffed punts that I can recall off the top of my brain, no fumbles. And the truth is, against the Patriots, you just can't turn the ball over and expect to win, period. End of story. It's literally one of the absolutes in pro football. The Broncos turned the ball over ultimately three times, again, the last of which was on their final play, that fumble, Norwood. But Trevor Siemian's terrible interception on that first play of the second quarter, it basically resulted in, at the least, a 10-point swing, because the Broncos were on the Patriot 14-yard line. You know, they would have at least come away with 3 points in all probability. Instead, Logan Ryan jumps the route, returns it to the Denver 46, I believe. You know, and then Tom Brady, being Tom Brady, pounced, leading the Patriots on what would really be their only touchdown in the game. Before the second quarter is even halfway through, Patriots have already scored 10 points, all of which are off turnovers. That's not a recipe for success for any team, Luke. But going against New England, especially, just very disappointing.
Yeah, and you can take Brady's track record against Denver, but you know, when it comes down to it, Tom Brady is a high-powered quarterback. This is a high-powered offense, and to hold them to, you know, what they did in the course of the game, that is impressive. You know, that is something that Denver has to take and really kind of hang their heads high, whatever cliche you want to bring in here.
Sure.
You know, 16 points to the Patriots. That's a pretty solid outing for this defense, especially one that was put under the gun by the offense with these turnovers. Mm. I mean, the interception in the red zone was absolutely inexcusable by Siemian. Just a poor throw behind his receiver, and really a throw that wasn't really expected by the receiver either. So you have to assign some of the blame to the receiver there too. But this is a time when you need to really kind of play solid and play clean, and the Broncos just could not get out of their own way when it came to turnovers, one on special teams, two on offense.
What I couldn't understand, Luke, is why the Broncos went away from Justin Forsett. I mean, he had some things cooking early on, but after that interception, we mostly saw Siemian just throwing. Devontae Booker, as far as I'm concerned, shouldn't even be on the field except to spell Justin Forsett. You know, Kubiak's game planning, his personnel decisions on game day, frankly, at this stage, just have me mystified. You know, losing their best blocking tight end to a concussion and Virgil Green certainly didn't help as far as the whole Forsett and running the ball thing. But you abandon the run like that in a single-score game. I mean, from that point, it's basically child's play for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. Just play and keep away and play it safe and run the ball and suck the clock.
Yeah, and this is kind of one of those things that you'll see coaches do from time to time, and it's just mystifying to me. They get in their heads, and they get mentally behind where the game actually is. And, you know, at halftime, this was a 10-3 game. This was a one-score game, and it was never more than two. And at that point, there's no reason in a one-score game that you would abandon the run and just start throwing the ball. You have to keep up that semblance of balance. And at two scores, you can kind of start to open up the passing playbook and say, all right, we're going to throw the ball. What do we have here?
Right.
So when it's a one-score game, the run should still be a part of that offense. It should still be a factor in the way that you consider and play and call plays. And that the fact that they went away from that is troubling. And to me, it's also an issue that they went out on that final drive when, you know, they needed points. And you can argue that it was just kind of they were really kind of the trotting out on a dead horse, so to speak.
Yeah.
But they went out with Devontae Booker and not with Forsett. And
exactly.
To me, Forsett just provides so much more of a pass catching role in this offense that even the personnel decisions to me were surprising.
Yeah, and blitz pickup. I mean, we've seen that be a real struggle for Booker, especially since CJ Anderson was lost. But I would agree with you that the Broncos defense, going back just to a couple minutes ago, they did a really good job on Sunday. I mean, you know, they kept the Patriots in check. They allowed only 6 points on all of Brady's original drives that didn't start off a turnover. I mean, the defense, I thought, Luke, played well enough to win, but the offense is clearly DOA. And, It's not going to get better this year. You know, what you see is certainly what you get. I, speaking for myself, was hopeful that Kubiak could pull his head out, let's just say that, and that Justin Forsett's presence could spark some things. But I got to say, I'm done living like Bon Jovi. I'm done living on a prayer, okay? As an analyst, my mind, you know, it just wouldn't let me accept how low this offense had sunk, because I've seen, you know, over the last 2 years with Kubiak, we've seen them play terrible offense for the first half of a game and then come back. And I just felt like with the stakes being so high, that even if we saw things that weren't going so well in the first half, the second half, things could open up. Today, however, there's no question in my mind. Put a fork in them. This Broncos offense is done. It is what it is.
Yeah, and that's what I was, you know, I've been alluding to for several weeks, is at this point, you know, there's no cavalry, there's no white horse. What you see is really what you're going to get. And, you know, that is a questionable offense here. And I know I've talked about this multiple times, but consistency is the key here. And most weeks, consistency means you get flashes of good play and you get flashes of bad play. And occasionally you'll see a team put together those flashes and be consistent and have a good game. And then there are games like this one where you don't get the good parts of inconsistency. You just get the poor parts. And this is a game where the offense fell apart. They overthought things when it came to personnel. I really think Simeon, he didn't take a step forward here. He almost took half a step backward, or just slipped a little bit on that slick turf. This is a situation where this offense, this is not a playoff caliber offense, and they need to find something, you know, be it play calling, be it personnel. They need to get their act together, because at 8-6 with, you know, a road game against Kansas City and a home game against Oakland, this window is closing.
It is. And, you know, speaking to consistency, the only thing the Broncos offense has been consistent at this year is being bad. I mean, that's it. You know, you can't count on anything out of them. From the quarterback to the offensive line to the skill position players even. I mean, your Pro Bowl receivers were dropping balls today. And we're going to talk more about that here in just a minute. But before we do, let's talk about SeatGeek really quick, because SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the football games you want to see up close and in person this season. There is nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest plays of the year. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets, because I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, instantly I can find the seats that I'm looking for whether it's this weekend or any game this season. Now, with SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket, because they go out and price compare for you. They search multiple ticket sites and make sure you get the lowest available price. SeatGeek also wants to help you get the most bang for your buck, which is why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, which allows you to immediately see any underpriced seats, and you can take action, find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. And best of all, our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how you get that $20 rebate. First, of course, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, and then you'll want to enter in LO Broncos as your promo code. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code LO Broncos today. Now, Luke, looking at some of our listeners' responses and reactions on Twitter, it really looks as if reality has come crashing down hard in Broncos country. On Twitter, you know, there's a time I talked about how, you know, throughout the course of the game, I was watching the game, tweeting here and there, whatever. And I talked about how the Broncos need to, and you and I have discussed this on the show in episodes past, but really that they need to take the play calling duties off of Kubiak's plate in 2017, and that I honestly don't believe Rick Dennison is the answer to that. You know, to this day, I still don't really understand what Rick Dennison even does for the Denver Broncos, to be honest with you. But one thing I thought was interesting, Luke, in response to that, one of our followers, listeners, a fellow by the name of @morezo9, said, quote, "Dennison is useless and he's Kubiak's pal. Coaching changes need to be made on offense." And the thing for me, Luke, is when you talk about coaching changes, Do you think I'm wrong in that? Do you think Kubiak still has it in him to be a play designer, to be a game or a play caller on game day? Or do you think the Broncos are best served really looking ahead, trying to find someone else outside the team, across the league, who could come in and provide a spark?
Yeah, well, I've spoken before about how I think that this offense has really gotten away from the Kubiak principles. But at this point, my bigger concerns is that Kubiak, he's losing sight of other things on the team, and that comes down to personnel questions like we saw this week with Jordan Norwood and Khalif Raymond. And at this point, I almost feel like they would be better suited to bring in a different offensive coordinator with a different vision. We've seen that this offense can't exactly maximize the personnel that it has just because it struggles. I'm a big fan of suiting and fitting the offense to the players and not vice versa. I think that if you force your players and just kind of curtail them into your scheme, then right. that brings issues. It has its benefits, but it brings its issues along with it. So, at this point, I would really be interested in seeing Denver kind of see what's out there in the offensive coordinator market. There's always, a head coach who's just been fired, who's still a very capable coordinator looking for a position. And I'd really be interested to see them kind of take a look at the market and see what there is to free Kubiak up to be able to focus on other things, bring in a capable offensive coordinator, and of course let Wade Phillips run the defense.
Right, and I would say, at the very least, I think we can expect the Broncos to say goodbye to Clancy Barone, the offensive line coach. Beyond that, I think the Broncos just simply need, if John Elway is thinking this way, which I can't imagine that he's not, new blood at offensive coordinator, and even one of our followers, John Q. Common, at John Q. Common on Twitter, says this team has talent. Not much for coaching, though, past Wade and the defensive staff. And there's no doubt. I mean, the defense isn't the problem here, Luke. It's certainly the issues are coming from the offensive side of the ball. In almost every game this year, the defense has played well enough to win and give the offense the opportunity to ensure a victory.
I mean, if you look at other teams around this league, you'll see the opposite happening. I mean, this week Arizona put up 41 points, and yet they lost because New Orleans put up 48 points. That's not on the offense, but a defense that holds the Patriots to 16, you gotta get 17.
That should be a win.
Yeah, it really should be. I mean, I'm gonna take a look here just kind of as we chat, but man, how many times has a team held the Patriots to that total this year?
Yeah, good question.
I mean, it's because this is a situation where you expect Denver to walk in and be able to kind of come out with a win. And as I look through here, I'm not even sure that they have been. I think that might be their lowest point total on the season. Well, certainly with Brady as I look through here.
Yeah. I would probably guess that if you just asked me straight up, that I would surmise with Brady at the helm that was their lowest point total. One other thing too, Luke, while you're checking that out, it seemed like one of the themes that our followers and listeners kept hammering on in the mentions was the play of the Broncos tackles, Russell Okung and Donald Stevenson. And I'll be honest, when I first watch a game, upon first viewing, I'm not paying as much attention to exactly what's happening in the trenches. I'm not focusing as much on how'd this tackle look here, how'd this guard look here, et cetera, et cetera. Those are things that I start to examine upon basically multiple viewings. So I'll be the first one to say that although there was a couple of things I can think that pop out to me that I didn't like from Russell Okung, Donald Stevenson, I don't have quite enough yet to give you a full evaluation. What did you see out of Denver's bookend tackles today, Luke? How much of the problem were they?
Well, I will say, first of all, that New England did lose 16-0 in week four, but that was with Jacoby Brissett when they lost to the Bills. I thought Russell Okung really struggled today. I thought he just had a hard time dealing with the speed off the edge. I really saw Stevenson be a little bit more cautious with that speed off the edge for New England, and Okung just got burned a couple times. I will say I don't think this got nearly as much discussion as it really merited. Michael Schofield was actually benched for part of this game, and the Broncos brought in Billy Turner at right guard,
right,
who has been inactive.
Game, right?
Right, yeah. And for many weeks, Turner has been inactive. And, if I was creating a laundry list of all the players on this line who I would signify as the problems, Schofield's maybe, what, fourth, fifth on that list.
Right. Not at the top. That was curious for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And when you've had a guy like Max Garcia at a guard spot struggling so much, it is curious to me to see them go with that personnel decision and bring him in for Schofield instead of maybe for Garcia. And I think it is another telling point as well that it's not Connor McGovern, the rookie out of Missouri, who's the one getting elevated to that starting spot. I evidently don't think he's ready yet. And I think that comes down to coaching as well.
Yeah, because as you've talked about, I mean, McGovern was considered to be one of the more pro-ready guards or interior players coming out of the draft this past spring. So you got to wonder what's going on there. You know, one last thing I want to throw out here, @MoneyMike0323. He asked, you know, of course, about the Raymond issue. Why would they keep Raymond out of the game? Why did they choose to, go with Jordan Norwood as the punt returner? The reality is it had to do with Kubiak's offensive game plan. And what better way to understand why than to hear it from the horse's mouth? Let's hear what Kubiak had to say about why he made that decision.
Well, what we did offensively today, I wanted Jordan up, you know, so that's my decision. Jordan plays in three wide sets for us and does a good job. And Jordan's done a lot of good things around here for this football team. So what we're doing offensively today, we're doing a lot of no huddle, a lot of stuff like that. So that's why I was up.
So he fell on that grenade. I mean, taking full responsibility, Kubiak, that is, for the decision to sit Khalif Raymond. So frustrating. I mean, we've touched on it already, but these are the type of mistakes that this late in the season, you know, you just can't afford to make, especially with so much already being at stake.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the way that this offense has performed throughout the year, you know, personnel decisions, I would say, have been at the forefront for much of that. And part of that comes down to, you know, Norwood does have experience. I mean, he has seen the third most receiver snaps this season. So it's not like they haven't, you know, it's not like they're just now deciding to get him on the field. He's been there. He's had that experience. And so they're going back to him. And now the issue is, well, they're going back to that over, you know, special teams. And we really saw that suffer with Khalif Raymond not back there and Norwood muffing that one punt. And obviously he failed to make an impact on offense too, fumbling away the end of the game, really. So that is, you know, that's a real issue. And that's a real key moving forward is what are the Broncos going to do, first of all, about that number three receiver position, second of all, about the returner position. And really, at this point, you got to think third of all, Norwood's roster chances.
Yeah, I'm. If I had to bet money on it today, I would bet that Jordan Norwood is not on this roster by Tuesday afternoon. I think that was just too much. Poor guy. And, you know, I do feel for him. I mean, it's a pressure cooker. It's a tough situation. We've seen him make plays for the Broncos in pressure-filled moments in the past, most notably the 61-yard punt return in the Super Bowl. But, you know, a lot of this, going back to it, I'm sure had to do with the decision to suit Billy Turner. Somebody had to sit, and they thought, well, we'll kill two birds with one stone. We'll sit Jordan Norwood. We'll sit Khalif Raymond and go back to Jordan Norwood because he can return punts, and we want him in particular involved in the offensive game plan and the passing game. Another thing I thought was interesting, Luke, after the game, Kubiak, of course, was asked why he went away from Justin Forsett. It really was a head scratcher. Here's what Coop had to say about it.
Well, you know, I have to go look at it, but we moved the ball extremely well in the first half. And if we catch a ball in the second half, I think we move the ball some more. You know, we missed, we got about four or five balls that we make plays on. First, third down, second half, you know, we're fixing to be at the 40-yard line. So we had some big drops in the game that could have been a difference in us continuing to move the ball late in the second quarter and the third quarter, but we didn't make them.
Now, he points to the drops, and there were some pretty egregious drops in this game that killed some drives. So Coop kind of ducked that one, you know, pointing out or talking about how well the Broncos moved the ball early. Still, he didn't talk about why they went away from rushing the ball and specifically leading the way with Justin Forsett. And again, it just comes back to me, you know, hammering a dead horse here, but it's just bad coaching, Luke, to go away from something that seemed to be working in-game. You know, we've talked about in the past, Kubiak struggles to make adjustments. Here, he didn't even have to make an adjustment. It was to just continue to pepper Justin Forsett into the game plan on the gridiron and keep the Patriots off guard. Is it going to be a run? Is it going to be a pass? they did, you know, you never know. That's the whole point of balance. But in this case, the Patriots knew they could sell out. They could call their coverages around the concept, Luke, that it was going to be a pass.
Right. And in this, just his second game with the team, you know, Forsett already established himself as the starter. He was the starter for this week. He was making plays running the ball. We saw that 13-yard gain on their first drive. You know, he was making plays catching the ball. This is a guy who really has shown so far in Denver that he can make plays when he touches the ball. And it is an absolute head scratcher that they went back to Booker so consistently, including on that final drive, especially when you like to have that guy who can pass block and who can catch out of the backfield. So that really was just an absolute head scratcher to me.
It's interesting going back to Simeon's interception. You know, it was a killer. No getting around it. And, of course, that was one of the first questions that Kubiak fielded out of the gates after the game. Here's what he said.
Yeah, Mike, you know, I mean, I think we had 150 yards in the first quarter, something like that, you know. A lot of ball movement, but you look up on the board, there's 3 points there. So, and actually they turned that into a touchdown, so that's a, you know, 14-point swing in a lot of ways. So, but that's the way they play. I mean, you better find a way to play good against them in the red zone, and whether you move the ball or not, you got to find a way to be successful down there, and we didn't do that.
But and again, it goes back to preparation. I mean, everything I was hearing coming out of Dove Valley and the things I was being told, the Broncos were locked in on this game. The whole team, you know, was viewing this game within the correct scope, how important it was being a catalyst if they could win this, you know, get some momentum, hopefully enough to go on and win the next two and stay in control of their playoff destiny. They knew how slim the margin of error against New England would be. But in a multitude of ways, all of which was offensively, of course, they gave the opponent the opportunity to capitalize and create an advantage.
Yeah, and I don't know, really, I'd have to look at the all 22 of this and see the full field, but Simeon was bailing on some pockets that looked pretty good. I mean, I don't know if it was just a case of him not seeing the coverage and getting frenzied, you know, mentally, or just not feeling comfortable in the pocket, but you know, when you have a leader who's, you know, he's calm in the huddle and then he gets on the field, takes that snap and he bails a clean pocket,
yeah,
you know, your offense kind of starts to react because they feed off that quarterback. And when he's giving off that nervous on-field energy, it doesn't matter how calm he is on the sideline or in the huddle. When the bullets start flying and when, you know, you've got large men running at you,
oh, yeah,
you know. You know, the offense, the rest of the offense, they feed off that pace. And so to see Simeon bailing on those clean pockets, again, I'd have to check the film to see, you know, whether or not guys were open. But that is an issue in and of itself as well.
And that's one thing I would say just upon first glance watching this game only one time. By and large, I thought the Broncos did it, the offensive line were, I wouldn't give them an A by any stretch, but I would say they were at least solid and gave Simeon the time he needed. There were times, I would agree with you, that he just seemed to either get skittish and break the pocket early. There was also a few times he held onto the ball too long. And, you know, it all trickles down. It affects everybody up from the offensive line to the skill positions to the receivers. You know, when a quarterback plays that way, and it's just another symptom of Simeon being a young guy, you know, and I don't say that to excuse him, but, I mean, this guy's still in his first year as a starter, going toe-to-toe against Tom Brady, and maybe the pressure got to him. Maybe he's not quite as cool of a customer as, you know, he and his teammates would leave you to believe. But finally, Luke, I want to talk about something Kubiak said about where the Broncos go from here, because that's what's really on a lot of people's minds today, the day after such a brutal loss. And I don't think, I'll tell you what, after that loss, I don't think the Broncos are going to win 10 games this year. I mean, this loss hurts. The pride aspect, the lack of momentum, how it kind of sucks the life. You can feel it. As a fan listening to this show right now, you can feel how that loss just sucked the life out of you. Now imagine how that feels inside the locker room. It's going to haunt them. There's only 2 games left in the season, but it's going to haunt them. But Kubiak kept coming back to this 10 games, 10 wins number. Here's what he had to say about it real quick.
You know, I don't know what the scenarios are, Jeff. I know why they would need to win, right? So, I mean, you know, losing this game hurts, and there's a lot of people crowded at the top. And, I mean, I can't sit here and tell you what all the scenarios in, but I know if we don't find a way to – to win 10 games, we're not going to have an opportunity. So I think we all understand that. We've understood that from the get-go.
Now, Luke, even if the Broncos win both of their final games, which is a very, very, very big if, they're no longer in control of their playoff destiny. That's gone now. And now they've got to basically root for other teams to lose while, you know, focusing on the task of taking care of business themselves. And, you know, that's just not where you want to be this late in the season. It's a tough road to hoe.
Yeah, and, you know, at the end of the game, they flashed up that graphic, the AFC playoff picture. Right now, the Broncos are in a three-way tie, a game outside the wild card spot. This is a place they obviously don't want to be, especially with the way that the AFC North is looking right now. I mean, the Steelers and Ravens are probably gonna snatch one of those wild card spots, and between the Raiders and the Chiefs, you got the others. I mean, look at Tennessee today. They pulled out a gritty, scrappy win here. Ugly win's a win. And they might end up out of the playoffs. I mean, they've beaten the Broncos and Chiefs in consecutive weeks. The Chiefs at home. Team is for real. And they might not make it into the playoffs. I mean, that's how good this playoff picture is right now. You need 10 wins or you're going to be on the outside. And even then, I think there are going to be teams with 10 wins that might not make the playoffs this year. I really do.
I do, too. And it kind of reminds me of 2008, the year Brady injured his knee in the opening game. And Matt Cassel led the way for the New England Patriots. They won 10 games that year, 10-6, missed the playoffs. It happens. It's a rarity. I think, if I remember right, I read something on this. I think it's happened like 15 or 19 times in the history, dating back to 78, I believe, or was it 76, when they started the 16-game schedule. It's only happened 15 or something like that times. That a team has gone 10-6 and missed the playoffs. And even if everything henceforth goes the way the Broncos need it to go on the field for them, they still now have to depend on, you know, the luck and outcome of other teams. So, you know, it's hard to feel positive after this type of a loss. Two very tough losses, two must-win games in a row that they dropped. But it's symptomatic. You got to understand as fans, we as analysts, we have to understand that it's symptomatic of a larger issue, and that is that, you know, the Broncos lost a lot of leadership over the offseason. They thought they had made the right fixes to the offensive line. Clearly, they did not. In fact, I think it's pretty obvious they took a step backward in that department from even the tough, sketchy group of last year. And you got to start to hope, or question, I should say, how well this front office can actually evaluate offensive line talent. That's a big concern and something I'm sure Luke and I will be digesting and talking about as the weeks progress and then as we get into the off season. But, hey, if you're looking at this right now, the season's not over. There's still opportunities to get into the playoffs. But Luke and I are right there with you if right now you're not feeling too optimistic about that. So we'll digest this game, you know, we'll continue to as we go throughout the week. For now, I think that's going to do it for the gut reaction episode today. Luke, you got anything else?
That's about it from where I'm sitting over here.
Yeah, it is what it is. You can find Luke on Twitter at Luke Polglaze and myself at Chad N. Jensen. Don't forget to follow at Locked On Broncos. Make sure you subscribe. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Keep your chin up.
Mile High Huddle.